For the most diverse range of programs, you're listening to 88.3 Southern FM.
Yes, and welcome to the Space Show, presented by members of the Space Association of Australia. Hello, I'm Andrew Rennie. And on this evening, we're going to be looking at John Glenn. Yes, and we'll also be looking at some satellites that are due to be launched tomorrow morning. So we head out with a track, a very long track actually. It's by Sam Lightning Hopkins, who lived from 1912 to 1982. And it was written by Sam the same day as the flight of John Glenn, the first flight, Mercury 6, on Friendship 7, after watching it on his landlady's television. So this is the Happy Blues for John Glenn.
This morning with this on her mind. Said ain't no living man can go around the world three times, but John Glenn got it. Yes, he did. He did it, I'm talking about it. Only did it for fun. $500,000 made him feel so well. He got to eating his lunch and couldn't hardly tell. He said, I feel all right. John Glenn said it. Everybody was laughing, and they didn't agree it. It was a minute prayer went up, praying that he would land. I looked at a schoolhouse full of them, and they didn't know what to say. But they said, let him come back up. Turn out to be one ring. I seen him when he left, but I didn't see him when he landed. But I knew he was doing all right when he said it's okay to give him a great big hand. He'll be in on the next year. This is on deck. His mother said, I know my son's gonna make it home. It ain't never been no mistake. This ain't lying. You know that man must have on his mind flying. It ain't nobody will take that much time unless they gon' build them own self airplane and they gon' go fly. They told him, don't worry, this is true. You may miss me for a few minutes, but I'll be back to see about you. He did. Yes, he did. When he done it, they didn't know who he was in the helicopter. Test his heart.
Well, that pretty much tells the story of John Glenn's first flight into space aboard Mercury 6, or Mercury Atlas 6, if you want to be pedantic. We're going to have more about John Glenn and his life later in the show. During the week, we were saddened to learn of the death of John Herschel Glenn. Now, we did give you a bit of a tip-off of this earlier in the year when we indicated that he was very sick and we couldn't quite say he was about to die at the time, but yes, he was unfortunately on the way out to leave us. So we're looking tonight at some of his life, as a few of the things he said, and we could go through all of his missions, but, Lightning Hopkins did that for us at the beginning of the show. And here's another little summary of his mission. This is by Walter Brennan with the Johnny Mann Singers, and it's called The Epic Ride of John H. Glenn.
Been thinking about it for a long, long time, since old Buck Rogers was in his prime. They worked and they worked till they knowed what they had to know, and now they was ready to make it go. But they needed a man. They needed a man. There was a guy with freckles, the way it's told, with brains and courage, just 40-year-old. His hands was quick and his nerves was like steel, and something about him made them feel he was their man. 10 times he waited while the count went down, and the sea and the weather churned around. He sat up there in a frosted ship, and 1,000 hands that couldn't slip had a job to do for that man. Till the mighty Atlas, with a bellow of fire and a brain of steel that would never tire, burst on through a hole in a cloud and left behind a cheering crowd shouting, "Go, go, go!" The Friendship 7 rattled and shook, and only a brave man dared to look. Alone the capsule shot into space, by the will of man and the hand of grace, I am gold. I am gold. He went 3 times around from day to night, and people wondered, would it be his last flight? Would the rockets all fire? Every man felt fear, but control could hear John loud and clear. I feel fine. I feel fine. Friendship 7, with all its glory, drifted down out of the sky to the end of a story that you'll never erase from the minds of men. The epic ride of John H. Glenn. He was that man.
And that H for John H. Glenn is for Herschel. Now, before the mission, which, by the way, was in 1962, at the beginning of 1962, John Glenn was interviewed by the Voice of America. This interview before the flight in late 1961, and we now play you that interview with the Voice of America, late 1961, just before the flight.
Colonel Glenn, most boys have a dream someday of one kind or another that they'd either like to become a lawyer or athlete or a doctor. You ever have any strong desires or dreams of the future when you were a boy?
Well, I think probably every boy does. I know I had some of many different types, just the same as every boy growing up changes what he wants to be many times, I guess. Actually, by the time I had reached college age, I really felt that I wanted to get into chemical engineering, and that's what I was really studying when I was in college. I As far as early childhood dreams that I would be a pilot, yes, I had always wanted to fly, but I never had really seriously thought about going into it until World War II came along. And I guess I always had an interest in aviation because I know I was my main hobby when I was a boy was making model airplanes, so I guess my interest in aviation goes way back, but I never really planned to be a full-time pilot until World War II, really.
Well, then probably it never occurred to you then that while you were in school that you would ever be an astronaut.
No, certainly not. I think this space program has come on to us suddenly enough that there aren't many people in their wildest Jules Verne's dreams that ever really envisioned themselves as an astronaut.
How does your wife feel about your job?
She's as enthusiastic about it as I am. She was very happy at the selection, of course, and is looking forward to the flight. And she's gone through this pretty much with me, of course. We've considered this pretty much a family, not a family activity, because I'm the only one directly involved. When I come home from a training program someplace, we sit down and we share experiences, and I try and let the family in on all the things I have been doing, and it's been a real confidence-building program and an education for the family as well as for me.
What about your children? Are they just as much interested?
Yes, they are. They're very enthusiastic about it, and we all have learned a tremendous amount about the program in the last 3 years. I've tried to pass as much of this on as I can to the children, and they're pretty well aware of the space program now themselves. They read everything they can on it, and with what I've been able to give to them, why, they're sort of junior experts in the space field almost.
From the statements your wife and the other astronauts' wives have made, that they seem very pleased and almost excited about your job, especially you, since you've been selected to make this first orbital spaceflight. What qualities in them do you feel, Colonel Glenn, enable them to feel this way?
Well, it's difficult to pick out any one quality in the wives, or in my wife in particular, that makes them outstanding in this regard.
They seem to have no tears and no fears about what you're doing.
Well, there's a lot of courage. I guess if there was one outstanding characteristic they all have, and that my wife certainly has, I guess it could be summed up in the word courage. I know during all of my military career and during test flying and during combat, there have been many times when Annie was at home alone, of course, and not knowing what was going on. And she's come through all those periods, of course, in real good shape. And I guess probably the one word that would most describe her character is the one word of courage. I think she has what we'd call good old-fashioned guts more than
that. She certainly helped you feel, in carrying out what you're doing.
Certainly.
Well, outside of your participation in the space program now, what do you feel is the most important thing that's ever happened to you?
It's difficult to answer something like that because there are so many events you can look back on that went into shaping, putting you into the spot that you happen to be in now. There's so many little things of being at the right place at the right time that gave you the certain experience or the certain background that people later on were looking for. Or maybe there was a particular person someplace who put you in a certain job that gave you a background. If he hadn't done that, perhaps you wouldn't be where you are today. So there are so many people, places, and things, I guess, that are responsible for helping us get to where each one of us are today, that it's very difficult to say that there is any one particular experience or any one thing that shapes up as the biggest event in your life. I guess in mine, we could go back to Annie again. It's certainly been wonderful, of course, having her, and that I guess probably that would shape up as the biggest event, as it would in many men's lives, as the day they got married.
Well, Colonel Glenn, it's well known that you and the other astronauts put in many long days and many long hours with very little time off. If your boss came to you right now and said, "Colonel Glenn, you've got 3 days off, what would you like to do?"
That's a good one, too. With the schedule we've been running here for the last few months, spending so much time away from home, I'm afraid I'd just go home and stay there for 3 days at the moment. But we do have a lot of other interests, of course, when we're not quite as busy as we have been for, well, most of the time during this year. My family and I all enjoy music very much. We have a stereo tape recorder at home that we have a lot of fun with, and we have an organ that my wife plays, and we all like to sing, and we often sing while we're riding along in the car. Our interests really are quite diverse. Dave, my son, has done a lot of model building, and he's very active in scout work. And I would like, if I were home more, I would like to help out on some of that sort of thing. My daughter Lynn is very interested in art work, and I would like to even try some of that with her. Annie, of course, has music, and I'm afraid our interests are quite diversified.
Well, Colonel Glenn, why did you get into this business of space? Was it the possibility of being first, or was just the plain spirit of adventure?
Well, neither one. I don't think the first or the spirit of adventure, it doesn't really describe either one of the things. I think it's everyone wants to contribute what they can during their lifetime to further whatever field they're in. Our field at the time the selections were made for this program happened to be that of military test flying, and the characteristics that supposedly were embodied in military test flying were some of the same characteristics they wanted people to have for Project Mercury for training as astronauts. So I guess it was a natural outgrowth from what we were doing into this program, a sort of a natural progression. This is more or less at the pinnacle of our profession, the way we look at it.
Turning to the orbital flight itself that you are about to make very soon, do you have any fears of perhaps not coming back?
Oh, no. We have tried to take every precaution we can possibly take. We're not foolhardy enough, or not stupid enough, I guess you would say, to think that this an endeavor like this is just as safe as sitting at home in the living room chair. But on the other hand, we've tried to do everything that we possibly can do in the way of safety mechanisms and devices and training to make absolutely certain that we minimize the risk that is involved. We think we have pretty well succeeded. We think that we're ready now to go, and we think that our chances on this are excellent, or we wouldn't be going.
You are completely confident in the
yes,
whole operation?
Absolutely.
Well, just what do you hope to learn from this flight?
Well, we have a number of things, a lot of observations we can make. I guess they really break down into roughly three categories. One is how the equipment is performing in space. This is our spacecraft, of course. The next would be on how the astronaut is performing in this new and weightless environment. And the last would be to make what observations we can outside of the Earth and stars and moon and any external observations we can make to the capsule. Now, all of these have many, many things involved under each one of those headings, really.
I'd like to take one of them, if I may, Colonel Glenn. Just what functions will you perform as you're spinning around the globe?
Well, as an example, for instance, on the control system, while we will be monitoring the control system on the craft very carefully, there are two ways you can control the craft. One, you can leave it on automatic control, or you can take over manually and control the attitude of the vehicle strictly on manual control. And we plan to exercise both these, for instance. We want to see whether we'll control on manual flight adequately. We also want to take over and control manually to see how the astronaut fits into this program, so that we'll know whether we do or do not need all the fancy automatic control systems on future vehicles.
That leads to my final question, Colonel Glenn. What about future space flights as far as you're concerned? Are you looking forward to them, and where would you like to go?
Very much so. Looking forward to them very much, and I think I wouldn't even hazard a guess as to where I want to go. One of our immediate objectives, of course, is lunar flight, and we hope that we can be involved in that in a few years.
Unfortunately, John Glenn wasn't able to be involved in the lunar flights, although he did work on some of the Apollo systems in preparation for the Apollo program, but then he left NASA. And yes, he did fly again later on as part of the shuttle program and became the oldest person ever to fly in space, or ever so far, that is. In 1962... the neighbors who involved people called Minkoff and Hellermann composed a song called The Biggest Ride Since Paul Revere. And this was played on radio station WMCA in New York in 1962. And this poor quality reel-to-reel recording appears to be the only one in existence. We've been unable to locate any other recording of this particular song. So here we go with The Neighbours, The Biggest Ride Since Paul Revere. And yes, it is poor quality. John Glenn's flight was delayed by many, many days, weeks in fact, but eventually we had liftoff. After his mission in 1962, he was, of course, asked to speak at a number of functions. And yes, we could have gone the easy way and chosen the immediate post-flight press conference, but no, we've chosen something else. He spoke to a scientific conference in 1962, April the 6th. That's several months after the mission. And these were the comments that he made at that time.
A precise scientific account of what John Glenn experienced on his historic flight was given by the astronaut himself. Glenn gave this impression of the numerous delays in launch which he experienced.
As with every countdown, short delays were encountered when problems arose. I've had many questions since the flight. Many people were concerned about my mental state during this and earlier parts of the program, during the delays, which seem to be a part of preparation for manned space flight. People have repeatedly asked whether I was afraid before the mission. I think humans always have fear of an unknown situation. This is normal. The important thing is what we do about it. If fear is permitted to become a paralyzing thing that interferes with proper action, then it is harmful. The best antidote to fear is to know all we can about a situation. It is lack of knowledge which often misleads people when they try to imagine the feelings of an astronaut about to launch. During the years of preparation for Project Mercury, the unknown areas have been shrunk, we feel, to a very acceptable level. For those who have not had the advantage of this training, the unknowns appear huge and insurmountable, and the level of confidence of the uninformed is lowered by an appropriate amount. All the members of the Mercury team have been working toward this spaceflight goal and opportunity for a long time. We have not dreaded it, which some people seem to think we do. We've been looking forward to this. After 3 years, we cannot be unduly concerned by a few delays. The important consideration is that everything be ready and that nothing be jeopardized by haste, which can be preserved by prudent action.
After striking this note of confidence and composure, John Glenn went on to describe how he tried by various head movements during his three orbits to induce the nausea which had troubled Soviet spaceman Titov during his orbital flight. In this, Glenn was unsuccessful and went on to experience the entire journey in relative comfort, with the exception of high heat during the minutes before he was recovered from the sea. Glenn went on to comment on his ability to distinguish details on the land and sea below him during flight. His observation of the horizon, of colors, of cloud formations, and lightning. He was especially impressed with man's ability to handle himself and the spacecraft.
Of major significance is the probability that much more dependence can be placed on man as a reliably operating portion of the man-spacecraft combination in the future. In many areas, his safe return can be made dependent on his own intelligent actions, a design concept it was not possible to follow up to this time. These areas must be assessed carefully, for man is certainly not infallible, as we are all acutely aware. Many things would be done differently in this flight if this flight could be flown over again, but we learn from our mistakes. I never flew a test flight on an airplane. I didn't return wishing I had done some things differently. And space test flights are no different from that. Even where automatic systems are still necessary, mission reliability is tremendously increased by having the man as a backup. The flight of Friendship 7 is a good example. This mission would almost certainly not have completed its three orbits and might not have come back at all if a man had not been aboard. Reliability, then, is one facet of man's addition to the future of space flight. The other biggest one, I feel, is adaptability. The flight of the Friendship 7 Mercury spacecraft has proved that man can adapt very rapidly to this new environment. His senses and capabilities are little changed in space. At least for the 4.5-hour duration of this mission, weightlessness was no problem. Man's adaptability is most evident in his powers of observation. He can accomplish many more and varied experiments per mission than can be obtained from an unmanned vehicle. When the unexpected arises, as happened with the luminous particles and layer observations on this flight, he can make observations that will permit more rapid evaluation of these phenomena on future flights. Indeed, on an unmanned flight, there likely would have been no such observations.
John Glenn speaking in Washington, I think it was, yes, and that was recorded for us by the Voice of America in 1962. Well, we finished this tribute to John Glenn on the Space Show on Southern FM with the Cliff Dwellers. Now, they wrote a song in 1962 called Midnight in Canaveral, and they did this in honor of John Glenn. The Cliff Dwellers, Midnight in Canaveral.
Good evening. This is Walter Bronkite here at Cape Canaveral. What a beautiful evening. We're waiting for the greatest launch of them all. Not one, not two, not three, four, five, or six, but seven. Here comes the countdown. A 10, a 9, an 8, a 7, a 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, blast off!
This is Mercury Control Center. The Jazz Friendship Capsule is now in orbit, and everything is reported go.
Well, go, Glenn, go.
Mercury Control Center. Swinging spaceship number 2 reports he will now take manual control of his instrument.
Let me hear you, Scott!
Mercury Control. The Jazz Rocket number 3 says his flight is comfortable, no rock and roll, and that everything is groovy.
Take a chorus, ship!
Control. Jazz Friendships 4, 5, 6, and 7 all report they're ready to wail.
Gus, Deke, Coop, Walt, go, baby, go!
Mercury Control Center. All ships are in tune and report back that everything is cool and groovy and way out and swinging A-OK.
Hey, we're Axco!
Woo! And you're listening to 88.3 Southern FM.